is our man in Manawatu, Peter Lamp. Kia ora, Peter. Welcome back to Knights.
Thanks, Brian.
How's it going covering club rugby, Peter? Is it any more success with some of the clubs getting people to actually play the rugby, especially in the front row?
That seems mostly to have been solved. In the early games, there were a few golden oldie scrums where they're insufficient props, but they've seemed to have found some of these chunky guys and thrown them in there. And Manawatu lost one club team that didn't make it this year. They're down to seven. It's turned out to be quite an even competition, so maybe there have been some spin-offs from that one club which defected through lack of players or players who only wanted to play a grade down.
So what's the etiquette at the moment with club rugby and people watching and playing? I assume players obviously aren't going to be playing with masks on, are they?
No, well, I'm the only one who wears a mask when I go of the hundreds who go along there, and I'm wondering whether I should abandon it. I went and spoke to one coach the other day, and he says, "Have you got COVID?" And I said, "All I've done is I've got a mask on." And I find it extraordinary that no one else bothers. And I wonder whether it's complacency. As far as I'm concerned, there's still a pandemic going on, and people are still getting sick and hospitalised. So I think I'll stick to my guns with my black mask.
Are people hassling you for wearing a mask?
No, not really. No, I think that's something that looks sideways at me, I think. But I think it's just the majority who aren't masked and feel as though they're impervious to this germ, which spreads like anything.
Peter, with the numbers, maybe, and now it seems like you've actually got some numbers, the front row situation's not so crucial now, but are people starting to talk about merging some of the provinces?
Well, I've written a little bit about this. No, they're not at the moment, but take Manawatu down to seven teams. They used to have up to about 12 or even more than that in the senior division. And Manawatu's neighbours, Whanganui, are down to five, which is getting marginal to have a competition. They lost Ruapehu from Oakuni, who have always been strong. So they're down to five. So you can sort of see if this attrition keeps going on, that in years ahead, and if Whanganui have fewer teams and maybe Manawatu, then you'd expect them to join up, I would say, because already the Whanganui women and the Whanganui Colts play in Manawatu. It would make for some big trips, because one of their teams is at Namatapuri, way up the top of the Waitotra Valley, which is en route to Waverley, Taranaki, Pātiawai. But club teams tend to like a bus trip or two, for reasons you and I can probably work out. So that's not going to happen immediately, though.
Manawatu did merge. There was the attempt to merge Manawatu and Hawke's Bay into the Central Vikings. The idea, I guess, was to have a team that was in the top division, given you had a couple of reasonably large towns in Palmerston North and Napier Hastings where you could have games and have big crowds. But what happened?
That wasn't really accepted by the two populations. They had to train in Waipakarau, which meant a decent amount of travel for both Hawke's Bay and Manawatu. Financially, it went down the gurgler pretty much, which is why the New Zealand Rugby Union at the time decided after 2 years that's enough. So then it all just fell apart. And it was only a merger of the teams, not of the union. The union stayed pretty much separate. And then they also played in funny orange jerseys, I think, which turned off half of the...
I remember those orange jerseys.
Yeah, it was so they didn't play in either black and white or green.
Maybe they couldn't decide, so they went for orange.
Yeah, and it wasn't accepted by the likes of Northland. Were very vitriolic about this ham-fisted sort of amalgamation of the teams. It was a pretty good team the second year. I mean, Christian Cullen and all those guys. It was a good side, but I think the right thing happened in the end.
Do you think Whanganui would support merging with Manawatu, because they might just see it as a takeover?
I think they would. Whanganui, I don't know if we have to use the H, do we? In the old F. Anyway, they still have a probably the strongest Heartland team in the next division down. So they would probably still be able to commit to that. But it's just whether the if you're down to four clubs or something, it's hardly sustainable. So you'd really want to be looking elsewhere. And you'd have to wonder whether what the strengths of the two club competitions were like as well. That'd be another fly in the ointment.
It's a rather sad thing to bring up, but I know it's such a big part of the Palmerston North sporting scene, and this is the stock car races that go on at the same place where the Manawatu team plays, the home to the Turbos. And the last meeting was marred by somebody, one of the competitors, dying on the track?
Yeah, it was the teams, it was the Superstock teams champ, I think we've spoken about it before, where they get about 14,000 on each day, and it's probably the largest sporting event that's virtually never covered throughout New Zealand by media. But anyway, this was it had been postponed from February because of COVID. It was held over Easter, and this was the second day, the start of the runoffs, and it was the first race of the day. And unfortunately, one of the Manawatu Mustangs, the second team from Palmerston North, Stephen Penn, one of their drivers, it seems like some sort of freak collision when he was ploughing into the wall at huge speed. Very sadly, he died, and. I wasn't there, but I know a lot of guys who were, and they're really affected by it because the organisers then had to make the call of calling the meeting off after only half a race, really. And that's unprecedented, really, but just out of respect, I think none of the other drivers were prepared to race anyway. And the crowd, while they weren't aware of what happened, were certainly sympathetic, so... There were certainly no problems. Just the cause of what happened is still to be ascertained by the coroner or the police.
Once people began to realise what had happened, how did people respond, Peter?
Well, I understand it. Everyone was pretty quiet. And certainly one of the guys, Tony Coffin, who has written Speedway for the Manawatu Standard for a long time, he was certainly affected by it. And wasn't able to put pen to paper, certainly not in that day anyway. I think there's only been one other fatality at the team's champs, and that was in 2009 when a Kiiki driver was killed. It is a fully contact sport, but the safety gear they've got now it's like Formula One. I mean, it's really good. So this was very unusual. This should have happened, and very tough on Stephen and his family and the Penns, who are well known in the stock car fraternity.
Has there been anything in public to for people to express their grief and show that or show a tribute?
The funeral took place at the Arena Manawatu. I wasn't there, but there were lots of cars, team members, and a large number of people. I think upwards of 1,000 attended that, plus all the social media comments, of course, and give a little page and that sort of thing.
Any call yet on what this means for the future of speed racing at that venue?
No, nothing. And I just think it was one of those things that happens occasionally. I mean, it's a sport involving very powerful cars, and most times it's pretty safe. But the concrete walls don't sort of give way too much. I can't imagine that will affect the sport long term.
Peter, you had I think it was a bit of an Anzac story about Ert, because I think he served in the armed forces, and because of that, actually it curtailed his sporting career somewhat. But you were writing about a bloke from Bunnythorpe, I think he came off a farm in that area up the road from Palmerston North, Ernest Buzz Sutherland, who could have been New Zealand's best ever decathlete if he'd got the chance, at least the Olympics, to represent us. But that didn't happen, did it?
No, the World War I intervened. He was with the New Zealand Rifle Brigade and got shot when he was over fighting against the Senussi, I think it was in North Africa. Then he went through all of the campaigns, France and Belgium. And even then, he didn't get home. They sent him to be part of the occupation force in Germany. And when he finally came home, he started resuming his athletics. And he was a decathlete before there was such a thing in New Zealand, I think. There was no decathlon championships at that stage.
When did he first start getting noticed? Was it before or after the war?
I think he was known before the war as well. You've got to remember, I wrote this a week ago, Brian, so my memory's struggling.
You're doing well so far, Peter.
Yeah. Anyway, he met the South African athletics team toured New Zealand and Australia, and Buzz Sutherland befriended one of these South Africans who persuaded him to go and live there, and he went to live in Natal, a town called Ladysmith, and ended up, having already represented New Zealand and Australia, ended up being invited by the South Africans to go to the 1924 Paris Olympics. So he accepted it. You wouldn't get away with it now because he was already a New Zealand representative. But anyway, he was in their team, and I think he got fourth overall at the Olympics, which is pretty good going. I think he was the top in the Commonwealth, and this was before the Empire Games, so he didn't have a chance there. I think they started in 1930. So then he came, I think he went back to South Africa, ended up coming home, joined the police, and had quite a tragedy. I just forget the date now. But anyway, he was biking to the police station for work. Felt ill, so he turned around and was biking home. And I think a strap of his bag that he was carrying got caught in the bike somehow. And he catapulted over the front of the handlebars, broke his neck and died. And I think he was only 42 when he died. So all in all, pretty tragic and very little known. Palmerston Boys High School, I've had a photo of him up in one of their aisles there in the school for years. The teachers have said to me they've walked past it for donkey's year and didn't have the foggiest idea what it was all about. So now they know.
If he'd been around now, I mean, to have somebody of that all-round prowess potentially getting to number four in the world, and this is after he was caught up in the, heaven knows what being in the war and being shot did to his ability to be an athlete.
Yeah, all of that stuff. And I think he suffered from gassing as well, like a lot of the New Zealand infantry did in that war. So all in all, they were tough guys in it. But the irony is that he died falling off a bike, push bike.
Can be a dangerous business, cycling, Peter.
Dead right, yeah, especially on the roads.
Yeah, and that was before cars got fast. Peter, yes. I also wanted to ask you about going back to Super Rugby, because you're the one who, of all my sports commentators, who follows it most closely. What you've made of the Super Rugby, the Pacific season so far?
I think it was okay while the New Zealand teams are playing each other, but I think they've knocked each other around so much that now they've gone to Australia. It's not looking too good. Obviously, they've lost a couple of games, which we find that very hard to take. But they're pretty undermanned because of all the extent of the confrontations they had playing each other. They've got a lot of players coming in we don't even know. We've also got red cards coming out of our ears, which now I defended a while back, but I'm getting tired of them.
Really? You're changing your mind, Peter? Because I do remember you saying red cards, well, that's the way it goes. We've got to protect people's brains. What's changed your mind a little bit?
Well, it's just there's so many of them, and it's just there's constant stoppage, and yellow cards for that matter as well, and rolling balls. So I think you and I need to get together and change the rules. But apart from that, there were three red cards this weekend, I think. One was a guy, Ray New, who plays for the Rebels, but is a New Zealander. He just about took off the head of Christian Lialifano, so his red was probably fine. There was another one, a Chiefs replacement lock, Simi Penifino, who was sent off for a high shot. But it was one of those glancing jobs that didn't look too good, and he's done it before. And then Hamish Dalzell, the replacement lock for the Crusaders who lost to the Waratahs. He did two sort of silly shots in a row, and off he went. So really, I'm almost speaking against my own argument here. That
yes, you are starting to sound like you are,
yeah,
Peter.
But I just feel as though some of these collisions, it's often the second player coming into a ruck and a shoulder sort of slides up and hits a guy on the head. I think that would be, I think I would advise that the rugby league, how they do it, they put guys on report. I think that would suit those sort of occasions. But we're going to get lots of them. We're going to get them in the tests coming up, and it just messes the game up, really. I mean, there was a time when, I think 50 years, there were 3 All Blacks red carded. Now you're going to get a bundle of them. I know they've got to protect the people's heads and all that sort of stuff, but whether the actual red shouldn't be a yellow or something, I'm not sure.
I've got to say that, in a way, I'm glad the Australian teams are beating us a bit in Australia, because if I remember rightly, last time it was so one-sided in terms of the New Zealand teams just dominating that it was a little bit boring. I think the prospect of us actually not being sure, certain whether we're going to beat these Aussie teams is just good for interest.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's because the New Zealand teams are largely under strength. The Aussie teams have improved. And they're also playing less expensively than what we did. So they're playing how the European teams, such as Ireland, when they come here in July, will play. Lots of box kicks and mauls and tight stuff, which I think will be good for New Zealand overall, because we're still just playing expansively. The ball's going out to the wings, you know, as almost as soon as possible. And it's not going to win New Zealand a World Cup playing like that. But as for the quality of the competition, I think you're right, Brian.
Finally, now, generally in golf, you're not at risk of suffering concussion unless you're really unlucky and a golf ball hits you on the head, and that's probably more likely if you're a spectator. But there have been some interesting New Zealand results with golf. Nothing to do with concussion here. This is my rather clumsy segue into the last topic, which is some golf success for New Zealanders overseas.
Yeah, well, the Steve Alker, which I think I've mentioned previously, amazing phenomenon is what he's doing. And he just hasn't stopped since we last spoke. And today he won another $500,000, New Zealand dollars, in the champion, what they call it. It's a seniors tour anyway for the over 50s, but it's big money. And it's all the stars of the game are in there. Ernie Els, Bernhard Langer, all of those guys are in there. And he won by 4 shots today. And this is a guy you'd just say was a run-of-the-mill professional in the United States. So he's totaled $1.6 million this season, and the season's hardly underway, really. He had 2 wins, and he's had another 2 playoffs for second, or for first. And then Lydia Ko was 3rd today in the LPGA event. And I think that was in California, Palos Verdes, I think. And that's still pretty good. We tend to think if she doesn't win, we're disappointed. But to get 3rd at that level is mighty. So
yeah,
she won't have to worry about a pension later on, Brian.
And she got a bronze at the Olympics. She seems to have turned a corner, really, hasn't she? But much more consistent in her form now.
She has. She's certainly a very athletic-looking woman now. If you notice, she seems way thinner than what she used to be, which suggests that she's fitter than ever. And I don't think she had a very good day off the tee today and still came through. So golf is it. And I think Ryan Fox got a top 10 over in Spain as well. So it's we're only a little golfing community, so it's pretty good, really.
Peter, it's great talking with you again. Thanks very much for your time this evening.
Thanks, Brian.